Chapter 9. It was some time before I recovered consciousness, so intense had been the strain of this session. I found myself lying on a bed in a room. Zira and Cornelius were attending to me, while some guerrillas in uniform held back a crowd of journalists and curious onlookers who were trying to approach me.
"Magnificent," Zira whispered in my ear. "You've won."
"Ulysse," said Cornelius. "Together we're going to do great things." He told me that the Grand Council of Soror had just held a special meeting and had decided on my immediate release. "There were some who opposed it," he added, "but public opinion demanded it and they had to yield." Having himself requested and obtained permission to take me on as his collaborator, he was rubbing his hands at the thought of the assistance I would provide in his research. "This is where you'll be living. I hope this apartment will suit you. It is quite close to mine, in a wing of the Institute reserved for the senior personnel." I looked round in bewilderment, thinking I was dreaming. The room was provided with every comfort. It was the beginning of a new epoch. After hoping so long for this moment, I was suddenly overwhelmed by an odd feeling of nostalgia. My eyes met Zira's, and I saw that the clever she-monkey had read my thoughts. A rather ambiguous smile came over her face. "Here, of course," she said, "you won't have Nova with you." I blushed, shrugged my shoulders, and sat up. I had recovered my strength and was eager to embark on my new life.
"Do you feel well enough to attend a little party?" Zira asked. "We've invited a few friends, all of them chimpanzees, to celebrate this great day."
I replied that nothing would give me greater pleasure, but I was no longer willing to appear stark naked. I then noticed I was wearing some pajamas, Cornelius having lent me his. But if I was able, at a pinch, to wear a chimpanzee's pajamas, I should have looked grotesque in one of his suits. "We'll fit you out completely tomorrow, and you'll have a decent suit for this evening. Here's the tailor." A little chimpanzee came in and greeted me with great courtesy. I discovered that the best tailors had competed for the honor of dressing me while I was still lying unconscious. This one, the most famous of all, had the biggest gorillas in the capital as clients. I admired his speed and dexterity. In less than 2 hours, he had succeeded in making me an acceptable suit. It felt quite strange to be wearing clothes again, and Zira looked at me as though she had never seen me before. While the artist was making the final adjustments, Cornelius let in the journalists who were hammering at the door. I was put through it for over an hour, riddled with questions, under fire from the photographers, and required to furnish the most intriguing details about the Earth and the life which men led on that planet. I lent myself willingly to this ceremony. A journalist myself, I realized the scoop I represented to these colleagues, and knew what a powerful support the press could be. It was late by the time they went away. We were just leaving to join Cornelius's friends when we were detained by the arrival of Zanam. He was obviously acquainted with the latest developments, for he gave me an obsequious bow. He had come to tell Zira that things were not going too well in her department. Furious at my long absence, Nova was kicking up a shindy. Her mood had infected all the other captives, and no amount of pike blows would calm them down.
"I'll go and see," said Zira. "Wait for me here."
I looked at her with a suppliant expression. She hesitated, then shrugged her shoulders.
"Come along if you like," she said. "After all, you're free, and maybe you'll be able to calm them down better than I can."
Together we entered the room with the cages. The captives calmed down as soon as they saw me, and the tumult was followed by a strange silence. They recognized me all right in spite of my clothes, and seemed to understand that they were in the presence of something miraculous. Trembling with emotion, I walked over to Nova's cage, my own cage. I went right up to her. I smiled at her. I spoke to her. For a moment I had the impression that she was following my train of thought and was about to answer me. This was impossible, but my mere presence had calmed her down like the others. She accepted a lump of sugar which I handed to her. and devoured it while I made my way out of the room with a heavy heart. Of that party, which took place in a smart nightclub, Cornelius had decided to launch me straight away into Simian society, since in any case I was destined to live in it. I have only a confused and rather disturbing memory. The confusion was due to the alcohol, which I started swilling as soon as I arrived, and to which my organism was no longer accustomed. The disturbing effect was an odd sensation which was subsequently to come over me on many other occasions. I can only describe it as a progressive diminution in my mind of the simian nature of the figures round me, in relation to their function or the position they held in society. The head waiter, for instance, who came up obsequiously to show us to our table, I saw only as the head waiter, and the fact that he was a gorilla tended to be obscured. The figure of an elderly she-monkey with an outrageously painted face was replaced by that of an old coquette, and when I danced with Zira, I forgot her condition completely, and my arms merely encircled the waist of a dancer. The chimpanzee orchestra was nothing more than an orchestra, and the elegant monkeys exchanging witticisms all round me were simply men about town. I shall not dwell on the sensation caused by my presence among them. I was the cynosure of all eyes. I had to give my autograph to a number of fans, and the two gorillas whom Cornelius had had the prudence to bring along had their job cut out to protect me from the swarm of she-monkeys of every age, who competed for the honour of having a drink or dancing with me. It was getting late, and I was already fairly tipsy, when the thought of Professor Antel crossed my mind. I felt steeped in black remorse. I was not far from shedding a tear or two over my own infamy, when I reflected that here I was, making merry and drinking with a lot of monkeys, while my companion was shivering on some straw in a cage. Zira asked me why I was looking so sad. I told her. Cornelius then informed me that he had made inquiries about the professor, and that he was in good health. There would need no opposition now to his being released. I vehemently declared that I could not wait a minute longer before bringing him this good news. "After all," Cornelius agreed, after thinking it over, "one can't refuse you anything on a day like this. Let's go. I know the director of the zoo." The three of us left the nightclub and drove to the garden. On being woken up, the director bestirred himself. He knew all about me. Cornelius told him the true identity of one of the men whom he held locked up in a cage. He could hardly believe his ears, but he too was anxious to do all he could for me. We should have to wait, of course, till the next day, and go through various formalities before he could release the professor. But meanwhile there was nothing against our having a talk with him at once. He offered to accompany us. Day was breaking when we reached the cage in which the luckless scientist lived like an animal in the midst of 50 men and women. They were still asleep, huddled together in couples or in groups of 4 or 5. They opened their eyes as soon as the director switched on the lights. It did not take me long to find my companion. He was stretched out on the ground like the others, huddled against the body of a girl who looked quite young to me. I shuddered to see him like this, and at the same time was moved by the abjection to which I too had been reduced for 4 months. I was so upset that I could not speak. The men, who were now awake, showed no sign of surprise. They were tame and well-trained. They began performing their usual tricks in the hope of some reward. The director threw them some pieces of cake. Immediately scuffles and disputes broke out, as they did during the day, while the quietest of them assumed their favourite position, squatting by the bars and stretching out an imploring hand. Professor Antel followed the latter's example. He came up as close as possible to the director and begged for a titbit. This unworthy behaviour gave me a sickening feeling, which soon became an unbearable anguish. He was 3 paces away. He was looking at me, and appeared not to recognize me. In fact, his eye, which had once been so keen, had lost all its gleam, and suggested the same spiritual void as that of the other captives. I was horrified to see in it no more emotion than that aroused by the presence of a man in clothes among the captives. I made a great effort, and managed at last to speak, in order to put an end to this nightmare. "Professor," I said. "Master, it is I, Ulis Meru. We are saved. I came here to tell you..." I stopped in sheer amazement. At the sound of my voice, he had reacted in the same way as the men of the planet Sorrel. He had suddenly stretched his neck and shrunk away. "Professor, Professor Antel," I beseeched him. "It's I, Ulis Meru, your traveling companion. I am free, and in a few hours from now, so will you be. These monkeys you see here are our friends. They know who we are, and welcome us like brothers." There was no response. He showed not the slightest sign of comprehension, but, with another furtive gesture like that of a startled beast, recoiled still further. I was in despair, and the monkeys seemed extremely intrigued. Cornelius wrinkled his brow, as when he was trying to find the solution to a problem. It crossed my mind that the professor, frightened by their presence, might well be pretending to be witless. I asked them to move away and leave me alone with him, to which they readily agreed. When they had disappeared, I walked right round the cage to reach the corner in which the scientist had taken refuge, and again I spoke to him. "Professor," I implored him, "I understand your caution. I know the danger to which men from Earth are exposed on this planet, but we are alone. I give you my word of honor. All our ordeals are over. You must believe me, your companion, your disciple, your friend, Ulis Meru." He shrank back still further, darting furtive glances in my direction. Then, while I stood there trembling, not knowing what else to say, he half opened his mouth. Had I succeeded at last in convincing him? I watched him, hoping against hope. But I remained speechless with horror at the sort of manifestation by which he interpreted his emotion. I said that he had half opened his mouth, but this was not the spontaneous gesture of a creature preparing to speak. He emitted from it a gurgling sound similar to those uttered by the strange men on this planet to express satisfaction or fear. There, in front of me, without moving his lips, while my heart went numb with horror, Professor Antel gave vent to a long-drawn howl.